This week on Grape Encounters Radio.
Wow. Why are you just staring at me?
Well, I'm trying to...
probably ran out of grapes.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that.
I don't know.
Ferment the flowers or just like throw them in there?
They just throw them in there. But you know, you've heard of Mum's Champagne.
Sure.
They use Mum's. No, they don't. Okay.
All right. And now, transmitting our signal to wine lovers of the world from our Atascadero Wine Cellar Studio in the heart of the Central Coast wine country, California. We bring you Grape Encounters with David Wilson.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow, talk to me nice.
Grape Encounters Radio, talk, and as you can naturally nice understand, I talk about wine just about, I would say, maybe 70% of my waking hours, because that's just the world that I live in. I cannot tell you how many times I hear somebody say, oh, I had this wine and it turned to vinegar. And the temptation for me to turn to them and say, no, it didn't, is very strong. And most of the time I'm polite and I just let them believe that that's vinegar in their bottle. What it is something very terrible that you would never put on a salad. And I thought maybe the time has come that we dispel that idea once and for all that your wine will turn into vinegar. Hence, if you've got a bottle of wine that was undrinkable or a bottle of wine that you didn't finish drinking, you can just leave it out there on the counter, and in a week or two or three or four, you can just sprinkle it all over your bib lettuce. Don't do that. It will not turn into vinegar by itself. And if you don't believe me, maybe you'll believe some vinegar experts that I have in the studio today. They're from Chaparral Gardens. They make artisan vinegars. I have just, by the way, before we did this, I tasted through, how many, Craig? 12 different vinegars?
12 different vinegars.
And then
yes,
I went back and I had seconds on one of them. It's Craig and Carrie Clark, Chaparral Gardens Artisan Vinegars, which happen to be just down the road from my studio. And you guys are winning awards like mad, national awards. Best vinegars in the known world? Or something
planet
like that?
Earth. Planet Earth.
Oh, planet Earth.
Planet Earth, yes.
Well, planet Earth is the known world, Carrie. Yeah, anyway, so you guys make how many different kinds of vinegars?
This
is not a trick question.
Yes, right? Well, it kind of is, because we make a variety of vinegars for certain companies that they're the only ones that have it. So I have 13 different vinegars in the bottle that I sell, but I also make, there's three or four others that I make specially for certain companies, and they're the only ones that have it.
I'm going with just under 20.
There you go.
Okay. All right. With plenty more to come, right?
Yeah.
And you make your vinegars from all kinds of different things. Now, a lot of the vinegar that you make doesn't come from grapes at all. And this is the one thing I think most people, don't they kind of believe that vinegar starts with grapes?
Mm-hmm. They do.
And that would be wrong.
That would be wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, like the big companies, the great big corporations out there that are doing like a distilled white vinegar, they ferment birch wood.
No.
They ferment wood.
No, say it isn't so.
It is so.
Birch wood?
Yep. So, you know,
when we get off the air, I'm going to write down the names of these companies. I'm never buying vinegar. And I'm going to ask people if they use that vinegar. And I'm not eating birch vinegar ever again. Comes from corn, right?
Some comes from corn.
And you make vinegar from corn.
We make
as well.
Ours from a non-GMO corn. We start, all of our fruit vinegars start with a non-GMO corn that is fermented into an alcohol. And then we ferment the alcohol.
And then you have a whole line of vinegars that are made from grapes, right?
Correct.
Zinfandel is what you choose, right?
We choose a Zin grape, correct.
All right. So how many times do you hear what I was talking about just a moment ago, people say their wine turned to vinegar, or it's turning to vinegar.
You hear it all the time.
Do people ever bring you their wine and say, here, just make vinegar out of this?
You know,
we've been asked,
but I usually turn them down just because they won't have enough. It takes time and a little bit of effort,
right,
to make a vinegar. So it's not like they can just bring it to me and I can snap my fingers and they're going to have some vinegar.
Okay, so you have sitting on the table something that I think came out of the Chaparral Gardens laboratory, right?
I do, yeah.
The best I can describe it, it kind of looks like a jar full of that ginger that they put on your plate at a sushi restaurant. You know what I'm saying? But a little more gooey, and there's a lot of moisture in there.
Correct.
Now that I think about it, it looks kind of gross. What is it?
This is what they call vinegar mother, which is a natural occurring acetic acid bacteria that will grow in a vinegar. You also need it to start a vinegar. It's kind of like the yeast for a sourdough bread. It's the starter for the vinegar. So if you do not have vinegar mother to put into that wine that you think is turning to vinegar, you won't ever get to that point. There's not enough acetic acid bacteria or acetobacter floating in the ambient air to turn that bottle to vinegar. You have got to add the vinegar mother. Also, you have to incorporate a lot of oxygen into the alcohol liquid in order for it to turn.
So you aerate the alcohol then?
You do, yes, huh? Correct. Most definitely.
Very interesting. So, but somebody could get that mother, and if they had a stash of that, then they could take bottles of wine, hypothetically, mm-hmm. and turn them into vinegar.
They could.
But that wine needs a mother.
If there's no mother in it, it's just going to sit there.
Everybody needs a mother. Anyway, but don't you have to distill the wine down first? Is that something that you need to do, or does it go into the wine just straight? It
goes into the wine just straight.
Just straight.
Just
okay.
Straight. Yeah.
But the corn, you distill, right?
We distill the corn in order
That's
to make
difference.
The alcohol. You have to have alcohol. To make vinegar, it's a double fermentation process. First fermentation, you make alcohol. Second fermentation is you ferment that alcohol off in order to get a vinegar. And in order to ferment the alcohol off, you need to incorporate oxygen and acetic acid.
So I was told a long time ago, if you have a bottle of vinegar in your cabinet and there's some white gunk floating on top, that's the mother.
That is the mother.
And I could take that. And how do I keep it alive? What's the care and feeding of mother of vinegar?
It needs oxygen and sugar.
Sugar.
So it needs a little bit of sugar.
Is there sugar in that jar?
There's no sugar in this jar. No. But there's sugars inside of the fruits that are in the tanks.
I see.
Where we are fermenting. So this develops within our tanks. And we have a different vinegar mother for each one of our different flavored vinegars.
We're talking to Craig and Carrie Clark of Chaparral Gardens Artisan Vinegars on the Central Coast of California. And we're trying to dispel the idea that a lot of people have that you can just take your wine and let it turn into vinegar. It will not do that. What happens when the wine actually oxidizes? Can we make vinegar out of that, or are we done?
As long as you have the vinegar mother, you only need about 10 or 11% alcohol in order to convert into a vinegar. The more alcohol, the longer it takes
but
to
that,
convert.
But that awful oxidized flavor in the wine, will that go away when you turn it to vinegar? So
correct.
You can actually use a turned wine.
You can use a turned wine.
Oh
most
my
definitely.
Gosh, this is a revelation here. So
that's usually what's happening is people are tasting the turn of that wine because they left it sitting out on the counter all night.
But that's going to go away when you turn it to vinegar.
When you turn it to vinegar.
So what do I have to do?
You have to go down to a lot of your local, wine shops or beer supply shops will have a powdered form of vinegar mother.
Okay.
And you take a little bit of that, you add it to what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to take it out of the bottle, put it into like a mason jar that has a wider opening at the top.
Yeah.
And put a little bit of vinegar mother into it, give it a nice stir, cover it so no bugs or anything gets into it with a little cheesecloth.
Okay.
And set it in a cool, dark place that's about 70 to 75 degrees and let it sit. Come back and just keep smelling it. And over the next month or two, it will convert into a vinegar. And you basically just go off of smell. If you're doing a home version, you're just going to go off of smell. And when it starts to get that vinegar acid smell, give it a taste. See if it's where you like it. If it's where you like it, put it into a bottle. Put it in your refrigerator. It'll keep for about 4 weeks or so. You're going to start losing a little bit of the flavorings. But anyways, that's basically how you're going to do it. You're going to get a little bit of vinegar mother and let it sit.
So you could either take the vinegar mother. You can take good wines and turn them into vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
You could take the vinegar mother, take your turned wine, and you'd actually be able to save it. Or, best idea of all, you could go to cgvinegar.com, order some professionally made vinegars, and dump that terrible wine, right?
That works.
Yes.
That works well,
That's the best
idea.
We're
very particular on the grapes and what it is that we're using. So.
I know you are. I've tasted all of your vinegars, and they're all just off the charts good. Anyway, I appreciate you guys coming in and talking to me about this. That's really an important lesson, but the revelation for me is that you could actually do it with a turned wine, so I just wonder if I could borrow your mother for a couple
sure.
of days.
Absolutely.
Sure you can. Absolutely.
Hey, how do you know if you know, when you take this powder and you're making this sort of starter, how do you know if you're mother died.
What's going to actually happen? It's going to start to form. It's going to actually start to grow because it's alive. It's an alive.
That's alive.
This is alive. It's a bacteria that is
He's
alive.
He's thrusting a jar of mother of vinegar at me. It's alive.
And over time, over the first couple weeks, you're going to start to see a little film on the top of that wine. That is vinegar mother that is starting to grow. If you leave it alone, it grows in layers and it will get thicker and thicker and thicker.
Okay. This is very interesting. Film at 11, right? All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you coming in. And you know what? Let's try this at home. And if you guys are successful at home at making vinegar, don't send me any. Don't send me any, but write me at Grape Encounters. Just write to David at grapeencountersradio.com. I'd love to hear your vinegar story. And it was nice to hear your vinegar story, Craig and Carrie Clark, Chaparral Gardens Artisan Vinegars. You guys, thanks very much.
Awesome.
Thank you, David.
I say we turn off the microphones and we make a salad.
Mm. Fantastic.
Are you in?
This is not just a wine show. This is Grape Encounters.
Back with Grape Encounters Radio, we're going to move on to talk a little bit about an event that happened 10 years ago this week. It was the release of the movie Sideways. By all accounts, there has never been a movie that has so significantly affected wine consumption habits as that movie. And I thought a good person to bring into the studio today is our friend Raymond Smith. We were tasting his latest wines last night. He is the founder and owner of Indigenous Cellars out of Paso Robles. He does not make a sissified Pinot Noir. He makes a Pinot Noir that's got a lot of guts. And Raymond, welcome to the show. Your first time.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk Sideways and let's talk Pinot for just a second. I'm going to have you taste something also and see what you think of that that's sitting in that glass in front of you. But the movie Sideways had a huge impact on not just how much Pinot is consumed, but on the wine business, because the cost of Pinot grapes shot up. The value of Merlot grapes went into the toilet. Basically, everybody started drinking Pinot. Now, just a little background. Tell us what you did for, I guess, really most of your wine career, because you have had a lot of wine exposure and you have a very interesting business.
Well, I spent the first part of my wine career doing mobile bottling, mobile packaging. One of the trucks that drive around the state and bottle and label wine for different wineries around California.
How many bottles can you complete like in an afternoon? Is it a lot, or it seems like, yeah, if it's on a truck, it can't be that many?
If it's a truck, if you have a good crew and then you have everything set up and it's a pretty basic package, you could do 2,500 to 3,000 cases
in a day.
No kidding. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And the equipment stays on the truck.
The equipment stays on the truck.
Oh, that's amazing. I gotta see that sometime. Let's move quickly over to Pinots for a second, because you saw my reaction to your Pinot last night.
I did.
I said, because when you were going to pour it for me, I almost said pass. You know, I'm completely Pinot'd out. But this Pinot was a completely different style. And you said something to me that I thought was absolutely marvelous. You said that you make an effort to create wines that are a unique expression of yourself, not necessarily a copy of what everybody expects that varietal to be. And I thought that was just very evident in all your wines, that it was what you wanted to make and you let the wine express itself, but it wasn't like everybody else's Pinot or everybody else's blend or everybody else's, you know, Cabernet.
I just think that it's the process that I go through in winemaking. One of the most important parts are wines that are not estate. You pick wines from a vineyard that is friendly to the varietal, and you look at the actual varietal and the terroir and the earth as a marriage. And then the weather helps this marriage become beautiful in a sense. And then you're just there to direct the process with your subtle nuances. But you're not there to, so to speak, make a dramatic thriller out of a love story. The wine is going to express itself. You're just there to help the subtle nuances come to pass.
When you taste a lot of different people's wines, do you find yourself disappointed that there's a lot of sameness?
I have actually changed patterns of winemaking that I did on my own, no matter how popular, because I found it to be similar to large amount of wines that I've tasted.
You want to taste that wine in front of you?
All right.
He's sniffing the... Oh.
You got me.
I got you. That is vinegar from the last guest that we're on. But good, isn't it?
Interesting. Beautiful.
Isn't it beautiful?
I like it. I like it.
I could actually sit and sip that all day long. That's delicious.
This is lovely on a salad wedge with a fresh cracked pepper and a little bit of oil. I could see having this daily.
Let's go back to Pinot and Sideways and all of that. First of all, Merlots in large part disappeared off the shelves.
Right.
What was left, I think, actually was the cream of the crop Merlots after the Sideways effect. And then... Pinots started showing up everywhere, and so many of those Pinots are just terrible. Don't you agree?
Actually seemed like it did a reverse effect. What it did was diversified Pinot so much because it was a trendy like wine that so many people produced it in areas where it didn't grow well, but it just seemed to be what was selling. Some people mass produced Pinot Noirs or made it more of a big bulk program where Pinot Noir has always been a small art form. It maximized the production of Pinot, minimized the production of Merlot, and most big artists Merlot guys never gave up on that.
We're talking to Raymond Smith. He's the founder of Indigenous Cellars. He makes a very gutsy Pinot that I find very, very enjoyable, very drinkable. But, you know, going back to the Sideways effect for a second, everybody thinks the Sideways effect, and that, by the way, that's a marketing term. You can find it in textbooks now. Everybody believes the Sideways effect was to make Pinot popular and make Merlot a lot less popular. I think the Sideways effect was to cause a lot of compromise in the quality of Pinot and cause a fairly significant increase in quality of Merlot. I think that what the movie Sideways did with Miles hating Merlot the way he did was force out a lot of Merlot production that may have been substandard and really take the quality of Merlots up to an even higher level.
Looking at it from that perspective, that's exactly what it did. I don't know if they were clever enough to have that idea at first, but I know that's exactly what happened. I know that there's a good amount of guys out here who've made Merlot, who have expertise in Merlot, who've gave me a bunch of good ideas with Merlot, whose wines have shined, whose wines have just grown and evolved into something even more beautiful than they were years ago, right in the starting of my wine career.
Everything that I tasted that you made was fabulous. So I'm glad that you were able to pop in here today and talk a little bit more wine with me.
I appreciate you guys having me.
You're very welcome. Okay, coming up next, we're going to have a very interesting discussion with Sarah Schneider, wine editor of Sunset Magazine. We're going to pose the question to her. If somebody is happy with their cheap, inexpensive wine, should we even try to convert them? Next on Grape Encounters.
I've got an $8 bottle of wine. Picked it up on sale in the checkout line. Oh, it looked pretty good to me. Made somewhere in California. For that price, honey, how bad could it be? I've just got one glass, but we can share. The first drink is yours, honey, I don't care. Leave the corkscrew in the drawer. It's all in the wrist. Give that top a twist and she's ready to pour.
Okay, so I got into a very heated conversation with a wine wholesaler about 3 or 4 days ago, a very heated conversation, and it was over this question that I am now going to put to Sarah Schneider, the wine editor of Sunset Magazine. I have no idea what position she's going to take on this one.
And I don't know what the question is.
Well, you do, because you were prepped for this show, Sarah.
Oh, right,
okay.
Right.
Where were you? We should not drink wine before the show.
I know, something's wrong here.
Okay, the question came up in a conversation. We were actually talking about two-buck chuck.
Mm-hmm.
You'd almost have to be dead
not to know what Two Buck Chuck is, because I guess Trader Joe's is all over the country now, right?
They are.
Not everywhere, but so some people don't know. But even I'm imagining people who don't have a Trader Joe's have had somebody bring them a bottle of Two Buck Chuck.
But you know, it's not $2 anymore.
$2.49.
I know. I bought some just a few weeks ago.
Why?
Oh, that's a secret.
No,
I bought it to do a blind tasting with some more expensive wine. And Two Buck Chuck is, like you say, $2.49 a bottle now.
Yeah. And we should actually do an entire show on Two Buck Chuck because it's an interesting show.
That would be fun.
This actually is a nice lead in to it, though, because the question that was posed in this impromptu conversation was, when somebody loves their cheap bottle of wine, whatever it might be, Two Buck Chuck, you know, White Zinfandel, whatever it is, do we want to convert them up to something that's a little better? And what I mean by that is this, is that there are a lot of people, obviously, that drink mass-produced wines, inexpensive wines, and a lot of people, especially the wine snobs, will poo-poo those people and belittle them for drinking inexpensive, you know, mass-produced wine. And so in this conversation, when somebody was talking to me about teaching wine appreciation and getting them to, you know, try better, more expensive things, I posed the question, why would you do that? Because remember, we're talking about people who love these wines, okay? And it's different than people who say, I don't like red wine. Where are you on this, Sarah?
Well, there's so many questions embedded in that.
Yeah, I saw your wheels were just like turning.
They are turning.
Smoke coming out of ears and nose and everything.
There's an assumption in there that a more expensive wine is a better wine. That could be debated.
Oh, man, are you opening up a can of worms
now? I know.
Because there are a lot of issues here.
There are a lot of issues.
All right, go ahead.
But we can keep it simple, too.
When have we ever done that?
We go in all directions,
okay.
I think. But I think it's a huge question. It just came up for me a couple weeks ago, and I was leading a seminar. I was moderating a seminar that had a number of winemakers involved, and they were presenting their wines at all different price points, and one of them was in the low teens. And someone in the audience raised her hand, and she said, I want to understand here what's going on, because I tasted this $12 wine and I absolutely love it. But she said, I don't really like this $50 wine.
Right.
And she said, am I wrong? And that was such a loaded question with wrong and right about.
So what's the answer then?
Well, my quick answer to her then, before the more thoughtful winemakers jumped in, was that on the lower price end, there's wine that is just made to jump out at you with fruit, generous fruit, and say, drink me right now. It's just made for pure, instant enjoyment. And that's what it's trying to do.
It's the wine equivalent of soda pop.
There you go. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily involve expensive wine growing or making. But then there's wine that's intended to make you think a little bit more. There are layers of interesting things underneath that don't necessarily immediately pop out. And some people just aren't geared to respond to that or even get that. But do they need to be? Do we need to push them there?
I liken it to going to the symphony. If you go to the symphony, you'll find different kinds of people there. You'll find the person who hears the oboe, they hear the cello, they hear the brass, they hear all of the different parts, and then you have the people who hear the symphony. It's the finished product. You know, it's kind of food's the same way, you know. Do you taste the frosting separate of the cake, separate of the filling, or do you just taste cake? Either way is okay with me.
Those are good analogies.
It doesn't matter. I say this, that, you know, you can get into a lot of trouble if you develop a passion for really good and oftentimes expensive wine. And wine can eat up a lot of your household budget.
That's true.
Yeah. So why try to convert somebody to something that is going to end up costing them? If you drink a bottle of wine every other night, let's say, some people drink more than that.
No comment here.
No comment here. Okay. But if you try to convert them, and let's say it's a $35 bottle of wine, and they drink three of those a week,
that's
the cost of your insurance.
Oh, there's a perspective.
Your car payment, right?
It does add up really quickly. But I do believe that people will automatically, if they drink that wine they're appreciating right now, and then allow themselves to dip into some other sort of more elaborate winemaking, or elaborately made wines, I guess you could say. I think there's a little bit of a natural progression that you'll come, practical.
You
start getting bored with the very simple one note kind of wine.
But you know, Sarah, that you've met tons of people who will tell you that, you know what, I am happy with my Sutter Home White Zinfandel. I don't want anything else.
Sure. And I actually still think Sutter Home does the best White Zinfandel. They were the first, and I think they're still the best.
And there's nothing wrong with White Zin.
Nope.
You know, if you like it,
absolutely
that's great.
Nothing.
And they do a perfectly good job. It's just soda poppy to me. And
right.
That's okay, because I like a Pepsi or a Coke once in a while. And by the way, can't tell the difference.
No. Well, you have a good point. But once in a while, you realize that that's just not filling the bill. You know, I had a friend whose mother wanted a recipe for a beef stew, and we had done one at Sunset that had Zinfandel in it.
Mm.
And I sent it to her, and her mother wrote back and said, you know, we made that stew, loved it, but I have to say, we don't drink red Zinfandel, so I used white Zinfandel in the stew instead. And I was horrified with a beef stew made with
white Zinfandel. That's like putting ketchup on tacos.
Kind of, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she stood her ground. No argument was going to get her off the white Zinfandel in that beef stew.
I used to love to try to convert people, not just when it came to wine, but everything, music, you name it. Come on, you just have to listen to this and you'll like it better. But I don't care anymore.
No.
If you're happy, I just want you to be happy, everyone. Just be happy, drink. But I will say this.
Don't worry, be happy.
But I'm going to leave you with this thought, and I know you're going to jump on this one because this is your passion, Sarah Schneider. If you're happy with inexpensive wines, go exploring all the inexpensive wines out there, because there's a gazillion of them. There are so many of them, and it becomes fun for me to try to see what I can find for $5 or $10.
I couldn't agree more. There are gems among that, in that sea. I'm mixing my metaphors here, but not all inexpensive wine is created equal. And I drink an awful lot of cheap wine. It's part of my job. I mean, it's not hard.
Out of a paper bag?
No, I do it proudly.
Okay, all right.
It's not hard to find a $60 bottle of good wine. It is hard to find an $8 bottle of good wine.
Because it's not to say that your readers aren't upscale, but people in general would rather pay less than pay more.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Especially rich people, by the way.
Well,
have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
People who've got a lot of money. It's one of two things. They've got really expensive bottles of wine that they're never going to open in their cellar, or they love a bargain.
That's true. And we're here for them.
Yeah. So, but there are so many great deals out there, and there's so much wine that gets dumped. And when I say gets dumped, I just mean that it's been in the storage building for a long time. It's getting very close to being past its prime. They got to get rid of it. They want to sell it. They don't want to dump it. And you'll see it out there at a really good price.
That's true.
Do you know that? And I'll give you an analogy, because that's what I do. When I want to go to a concert, I almost always buy the tickets the day before. When I need a hotel room, I always buy it the same day, because I can go on Priceline as an example. I love Priceline. And
I love their commercials.
I got a hotel the other night. It was a $400 hotel, and I got it for $100. Wine's the same way. Is if you look for the deals, there's always a constant flow of wine that needs to be sold. And you will find some real gems there.
That is true. Yeah.
So, you know, my wife and I have a contest, which is we go out and we have a favorite place to go to that has a lot of different wines there, and most of them under $5. And we have a competition. We each are allowed to buy 2 bottles of wine, and you can't go over $10. And then we open up the wines, and we fairly decide who the winner was. There's no money involved. Okay.
You critique them.
And that's that. Okay. So for those of you who are listening, and I know there are no wine snobs listening because you guys don't like this show, but if you're listening, you know, let that person drink the inexpensive wine and don't force it on them. For those of you who are caught in a rut, get out of your rut, because there's a lot of other really good stuff that you might enjoy as well, and you don't have to break the budget.
That is true, but you might find yourself creeping up.
Ooh, and that's exactly what we don't want to happen. No, that's okay.
It.
No, that's fine. You
it.
Know what? That's it. But the main thing is this: moral of the story, drink what you like. Don't let anybody tell you you shouldn't like it out of principle.
Big yes to that.
Okay. Sarah, I say sign out and go drink some really expensive wine.
Big yes to that, too.
Okay. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters Radio. That's going to do it for Sipping with Sarah. It's not going to do it. We're just going to do it again next week.
I'm for that.
Okay.
Another yes.
All right. Next week, we will be sitting here with the most expensive bottle we can find in Sarah's vast collection.
I can do that.
Ah, that's it. It's a deal. We'll see you next week.
Well, David Wilson uncorks the next story. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Grape Encounters Radio. This is not just a wine show. This is Grape Encounters. Encounters presents What We Heard Through the Grapevine. Today's top news, trends, and stories. Here's what we've encountered. This is Grape Encounters News.
All right, gotta say, I love the new music for our new news segment, except it's inaccurate because the song goes, yesterday's news just got here today. And we're gonna bring you tomorrow's news a day early. And to do that is the new kid, our senior wine correspondent, Larry Gifford.
Oh, I like that.
You like the title, don't you?
I do. I always wanted to be a new kid on the block.
Yeah. Well, are you enjoying doing the wine news? Because you were a big time news guy.
I love doing the wine news.
You're a wine
I wish people would stop asking me for free wine.
They don't ask me for it because they already know the answer.
Now they're coming around you to me.
All right. What do you got today?
Our top story, a decline in wine. Global wine production projected to drop by 4% in 2014.
Oh, no.
Chile off 23%.
Oh, wait a second. That's bad news.
Why is that bad?
Well, because Chile is the place that I always send people to. I don't mean physically send them to Chile, but I send them to buy Chilean wines when they're looking for a really good wine at a really good value. Because you can get if you spend $30, let's say, on a Chilean wine, you're going to get something really off the charts. Very good.
Well, if that hurts, this may hurt too. Italy is down 15%.
Mamma mia.
Due to poor weather and small harvest. Australia down 7%. Argentina 8%. The U.S. is off 5 to 10%. That's the bad news.
But wait a second. That doesn't make any sense. You said 4% global decline in wine, and every number you gave me was anywhere between 5% and 20-something percent.
Yeah.
So how do you figure 4%?
Well, there's always a flip side. You ready for it?
So somebody's making more wine.
This is the good news.
Okay, go ahead.
After 2 years of bad weather, France is expected to rebound this year, up 11%.
Oh, I tell you what, France needed some good news.
New Zealand hit a record harvest, 445,000 tons, up 29%.
Could not happen to a better country. I've never been there, and I'm going to go there. We're going to do the show from New Zealand sometime, because that's another place that I send people to for wine. Again, not physically, but New Zealand wines used to be, maybe even 5 years ago, you were lucky if you saw one bottle of New Zealand wine on the shelves. Now it's showing up in mass.
Well, they have sections in the wine store for New Zealand
wine. Oh, yeah. And the wines are usually pretty good. I mean, even there are some bulk-produced New Zealand wines, but they're pretty particular about what they send over here.
Bulgaria is getting as many as 11 new wineries over the next 5 years.
What does that mean? That Santa Claus is bringing them, or they're
built? Well, foreign investors are coming in town. They're attracted to the cheap labor. They want a chance to introduce new grape varieties that were more resistant to disease and drought and higher yielding.
Why in the world would they invest in Bulgaria when they could invest in New Zealand?
Well, Bulgaria is ripe for wine.
It's ripe for wine.
So here's the problem. This year, the grape harvest is so low due to the wet summer that the Bulgarian State Agency on Wine Growing and Winemaking is now allowing winemakers to add sugar to the unfermented grapes to increase the alcohol content.
So they
need more vineyards in there to
and they're probably adding water too. They're just probably fermenting sugar.
Yeah, but
add a little grape juice to it.
They're just sending it off to Russia for the most part anyways. So you're probably not going to get
Bulgarian
a bottle.
Wine is going to Russia.
Yeah. For the most part.
That's because the Russians cannot drink their own wine. Have you ever had Russian wine?
I've not.
I bought some Russian wine earlier this year in St. Petersburg. It was the most terrible thing you've ever tasted. And I had I visited a friend in Russia, and he translated what was on the label. And it turns out the wine was part Cabernet Sauvignon and part flowers.
Wow.
Why are you just staring at me?
Well, I'm trying to
ran out of grapes.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that.
I don't know.
Ferment the flowers or just like throw them in there? Or?
They just throw them in there. But you know, you've heard of Mumm's champagne.
Sure.
They use Mumm's. No, they don't. Okay. All right.
So, fun fact, Bulgarians consume about 100 million liters of wine annually.
Each?
No, total.
Okay, all right.
Only 5 million of that is imported. So They're making
drinking
a lot
their
of wine.
Own wine.
Yeah.
That's good.
Daily Mail in the UK is reporting a new scientific study by the University of Reims in France claiming champagne tastes better in a normal glass, not a flute.
I thought you were going to say, not a sippy cup.
No, it's
right,
not a flute.
Okay.
So the reason you may want to use a regular glass instead of a flute is because it will emphasize the aroma and the fizz in more complex champagnes. It allows the aromas to express themselves better. But the study also shows a lesser quality sparkling wine is better in the flutes because the bubbles add to the sensation of the wine drinking, the experience of the wine.
I think it's perception.
It is perception.
Put it in a nicer looking glass and people will think it's better.
Right.
And add sugar to it.
Maybe so. And the flute also gives it more of a nose tingle.
Did you just say nose tingle?
I did.
Really?
Well, yeah, that's true.
You're such a manly man. To use a term like that is just, okay, go ahead.
Speaking of nose tingles, Melissa Etheridge is starting a line of cannabis-infused wines.
What's the nose tingle? Is it the cannabis or Melissa Etheridge?
The cannabis.
Okay.
You might go a little numb.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not. Cannabis-infused wines. She was battling
like
breast.
Like marijuana.
So she used marijuana when she was battling breast cancer.
That's understandable.
And she used it to fight the pain and nausea of chemo and became a fan of it and an advocate of it. And now she's doing a whole line of products, including cannabis-infused wine.
Wait, I'm confused now. Are the wines for medicinal purposes or are the wines for everyday drinking?
Well, that's unclear. I watched...
You don't know, do you?
I don't know. Because she wasn't clear about that. Her purpose was medicinal, and she claims it's not to get high. It's to make you feel normal. So my guess is she's going to be trying to put these on the shelves of, like, medical marijuana stores where they sell the snackables.
All right. Let's get her in the studio, and you can try the wine. So what will they call this wine?
What will they call this wine?
Cabernet.
I like Cabernet.
Cabernet. How about this?
Nose tingle?
How about Zinfandel? F-U-N.
Oh, you're on a roll. All right. Well, that's the news as I see it.
That's the news as you see it.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's the news as we see it. I was here too. All right. Okay. Larry, thank you very much. Larry Gifford. And by the way, I do want to remind people take a trip over to the grapeencounters.com website. Check out our cruise. If you really want to have a great time, then join us in May of next year. We're going to be cruising. We're leaving from Rome. We're going to Spain and every place in between aboard the most luxurious cruise ship imaginable. And I want you guys to come along. We've done it the past couple of years now. It will be the time of your life. You got to come. Larry, you coming?
I'm in.
Ah, just sold a ticket.
I thought you were gonna.
No, it doesn't work.
Pay for it.
No, no. You do not have tenure yet.
Oh, okay.
All right, that's gonna do it for Grape Encounters. We will see you next week, same time, same channel. And just remember, if you're drinking champagne while listening to the show next week, use a regular glass.